Hello, and welcome to Encircled, the Halber Pocket Podcast. Episode 12, the 30th of April. On the 30th of April, OKW replied to Hitler, and despite wanting to spare the Führer from the exact grim details of the situation, they told him the bitter truth. They reported that whilst Wenck's forces had reached Fesch, south of Potsdam, they could not advance any further onto Berlin. OKW added that the Ninth Army was surrounded, but that a breakout group from the Ninth Army, led by panzers, had successfully broken out of the Halber Pocket and was heading westwards. However, their exact location was unknown. This finally convinced Hitler that the end was nigh. And coupled with the news that General Steiner would not be relieving Berlin from the north, Hitler finally realised that the game was up. Cue famous scene from Downfall. The battle in Berlin would soon be over, and the remaining Wehrmacht forces stationed outside of the city only had one thing on their mind: escape to the west. The Soviets also knew the fighting would soon be over. And from today, the 1st Ukrainian Front would now change tactics when combating the Ninth Army. Rather than sending wave upon wave of infantry against the Germans, which had been the standard Red Army tactic for most of the war, Konev now opted for a steel-not-flesh approach, and he resorted to pummeling the remaining Ninth Army forces through airplanes, artillery, and tanks. Nevertheless, no matter how they were to be stopped, Konev was determined to stop the Ninth Army breakout, once and for all. So he once again reorganized his forces in a last-ditch attempt to stop Busse's breakout group from linking up with Wenck in the Bielitz area. And the key objective for Konev's forces was to block the Mischendorf-Treuenbrietzen road with an insurmountable myriad of defences. This, it was hoped, would prove to be the final nail in the coffin for the escaping Ninth Army. And on the 30th, Wenck sent the following message to the Ninth Army. 12th Army now engaged in heavy defensive fighting. Speed up your breakthrough. We are waiting for you. It was therefore clear. The Ninth Army breakout group had to make their final push onto Bielitz now or risk there being no 12th Army left to receive them at all. So how exactly is Busse's breakout group faring? After the previous day's intense fighting to reach and take Kummersdorf Gut, Busse's breakout forces dusted themselves off and prepared themselves for the next stage of their escape. 5th Corps took over the lead of the group as contact with 11th SS Panzer Corps had been lost. This loss of contact was typical of the chaotic situation on the ground, as by now there had been a total breakdown in the command effectiveness of the breakout group. In fact, various sources claim that the senior commanders could only exert leadership over the units which were literally within shouting distance. By the evening of the 30th of April, Busse's breakout group was ready to go, and they set off from Kummersdorf Gut. After the previous day's intense fighting to reach and take Kummersdorf Gut, Busse's breakout forces dusted themselves off and prepared themselves for the next stage of their escape. Given the scarcity of fuel, it was clear that almost everybody would be making this last push onto Bielitz by foot. Three of the very last King Tiger tanks from the Kurmark division had to be blown up as they had run out of fuel. And even the senior officers from the Ninth Army Command had to abandon their staff cars as these had run dry. The officers were a strange sight, walking side by side with the bedraggled infantry and civilians, and they looked decidedly uneasy when the close quarter fighting with Soviet troops erupted around them in the forests. But the threat from Soviet infantry paled into comparison with the constant shellfire and tree bursts which rained down on the escapees. The German wounded tried to clamber onto the tanks in order to not be left behind, often fighting amongst themselves to secure their place. The losers in the struggle would be rolled off the vehicles, or pushed to the side of the road. After leaving the Kummersdorf Gut, Busse's group immediately engaged in heavy fighting when crossing the road between Treppen and Luckenwalde. And here, they successfully broke through the defences of the Soviet 117th Rifle Division. They pressed on, weathering a storm of Soviet anti-tank guns, and they crossed the wetlands of the Neuter River. However, despite this success, the German losses were enormous. Troops were shot in the swamps, vehicles were marooned in the marshes, and the wounded were left stranded in the open fields. And all the time, the breakout group was harassed by Soviet aircraft, artillery fire, mortar fire, and repeated tank attacks. The Soviets continued to harass the breakout group, with four divisions attacking from the south, along with armoured forces pressing in from the north. In any case, the key outcome of the 30th was that the Soviets were unable to split the breakout group into smaller pockets. Thus, for the final stretch towards Bielitz, Busse's forces were able to enjoy something resembling unit coherence. By midnight on the 30th, the breakout group reached the forests between Mertensmühle and Berkenbruck, and they paused at the Forsthaus in Mertensmühle. They were now only 10 kilometers away from the positions held by the 12th Army. Whilst the breakout group was creeping ever closer to the Bielitz area, the remaining trapped 9th Army forces in Halber were finally defeated after the 1st Belarusian Front successfully completed their cleaning up operations in the forests around the town. And at 5:30 in the evening, they reported that the German forces trapped in the Halber pocket were officially destroyed. The people of Halber had seen hell over the past week, but just because the fighting was over, that didn't mean their ordeal was over. Willy Hennecke recounts his experience of being liberated by the Russians on this day. "When I got to the top floor, I watched through the window as an assault team, approaching from Kilsteich, moved directly towards our house. I bounded down the cellar stairs, shouting to all gathered there, 'They're coming!' The room went dead silent as we went through some anxious moments. We knew that all the Russians had to do was throw a hand grenade down the staircase on entering, and we'd all be done for. 14 people tightly packed next to each other. It would be a bloodbath. We could hear them upstairs. Some guy said something in Russian, which sounded like a question. Old Wagner responded in a language I didn't understand. Waving to us, he indicated that we should go upstairs with him. So Paulus and I followed him, with our hands up. 9 men were standing at the top, aiming their submachine guns at us, with the leader addressing Wagner, who seemed to be fluent in the language. Later on, I learned that Wagner came from somewhere along the Polish border, so spoke Polish. And though Russian is different, he could converse with the intruders. They wanted to know whether there were any soldiers down in the cellar. Wagner translated and then assured them that the only people sheltering were women and children. And they should, he said, check for themselves. But much to our surprise, the men declined. Paulus had some tobacco stuffed in a paper bag on him and asked Wagner whether he should offer some to the Russians. Once again, we were taken aback when the Russian leader shook his head and instead fumbled in his breast pocket for a pack of cigarettes, which he, in turn, offered to us. Nobody had quite expected that, and we gratefully accepted. As the saying goes, as long as one can have a smoke together, nobody will get shot. They cleared out, and I was left with a feeling that they were all well satisfied with the outcome of this encounter. But that same day, we would receive several more such visits from the Russians. Thanks to Wagner's linguistic abilities, we'd always be able to reassure them that their comrades had already been by, and so they'd move on. After a while, the troops disappeared altogether. From my viewpoint, their behaviour had been impeccable throughout. But there were other visitors seeking, among other things, women, and indeed, finding them. Such nightly visits left their mark, though Ella hid behind the beds of the children and remained unscathed. Wagner's niece hid in a cupboard on the second floor and also survived, unharmed. As for the other women and girls, they had to obey and go upstairs. With the formal cessation of fighting in Halber, the Soviet armies which had been engaged with the mopping up action in the Halber area were transferred away. The 3rd and 69th armies were transferred to Berlin to assist in the final battles there, whilst the 33rd Army was sent to relieve the 13th Army of the 1st Ukrainian Front, which was then redeployed for the operation to take Prague. Clearly, the Red Army was shifting its focus away from Halber, towards other sectors still engaged in heavy fighting. Halber, meanwhile, lay in ruins. The dead and dying lay everywhere, with the streets clogged up with abandoned or destroyed equipment and vehicles. The death toll had been so high in the fighting that the corpses had been stacked on top of each other, and the stacks of bodies were so high they even reached the gutters of houses. The people of Halba, the ones who had survived at least, were ordered to clear up and bury the dead. But given the state of the bodies after the severe fighting, it was an almost impossible task. As Hilda Neufeldt later recounted, "One day, we removed some soldiers' bodies from a small wood at the edge of the town, and, to make transport easier, we laid out the corpses in a row by the roadside. Suddenly, a tank appeared, turned off on the middle of the street, and rolled several times over the row of corpses, back and forth several times, practically flattening the bodies of the dead. And as if that wasn't enough, the tank finally swiveled around on the remains, mashing them into the sand. The commander of the tank, an officer, leant out and yelled at us horrified bystanders, 'Hitler kaputt, Wehrmacht kaputt, Soldat kaputt, nix mehr da.' Then we were ordered to pick up the remains of the bodies with our bare hands and drag them into a shell hole." Whilst the human toll had been unimaginable, the destruction inflicted upon the town was equally as shocking. Precious few buildings had been untouched, with most of the houses completely burned down. The people of Halba would now have to rebuild not just their lives, but their town as well.